Hello and welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from the official Car Talk tax shelter here in Houston, Texas.
Hi, George. How's everything?
I just want the, who is that agency? The Internal Revenue Service to know.
No, the CIA.
Whoever it is that, who was that made those remarks about the president? Was that Thomas?
What? What remarks? What president?
Never mind.
Don't get me started.
Don't get me started.
Don't let me start off the show ranting and raving because I was basically in a good mood.
You were basically, okay. All right, you in a good mood?
I have here a virtual panoply. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
It could be. It could be a word.
Yeah.
A virtual panoply of mail, letters. And this is a very well-written column by a guy named Dick Fiegler from where? From where? Cleveland, I think. They get this now. This is on the verges of ranting and raving, but it isn't me ranting and raving. It's this guy.
It's Dick.
I don't know even when he wrote this. Now that we've knocked off communism, it's time we went gunning for capitalism. It doesn't work either. Not the way it's practiced over here, it isn't. We used to think that in America, a poor boy starting with nothing could work his way up the ladder of success to the top rung of fame and fortune, and that part may still be true.
H. Ross Perot did
it. But what you never used to hear about was the ladder of failure, because it didn't used to be one. If you fell off the ladder of success, you were supposed to pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and start all over again. That's what happens in Japan. In Japan, if the head of a company makes a bad mistake, he apologizes and he resigns. Failure in Japan is something to be ashamed of. Over here, we carry it to the opposite extreme. Over here, failure pays off handsomely. Take Roger Smith. Now, I didn't say this. This guy, well, Dick Fiegler said this. Take Roger Smith, for example. He did so well climbing down the ladder of failure that he ought to be an example for every deadbeat and wino from the Atlantic to the Pacific. Roger Smith ran General Motors into the ground, it's fair to say. Anyone who reads the news knows that General Motors is in big trouble, and Roger Smith did as much as any other single human being to get it there. And when he retired in August, this was last year, he retired on an annual pension of $1.2 million. That's $1.2 million a year. And originally it was going to be $700,000, but the board of directors didn't think he could live on $700,000. So they upped it to $1.2 million a year.
Well, with all this bad press, he's never going to get another job. I mean, he's going to have to stay in retirement.
It says, but money doesn't grow on trees. Where was the money going to come from? General Motors announces the layoff of 74,000 people, and then it cancels the $600 Christmas bonus that it was going to pay to middle-level managers. That way, there was enough money in the kitty to pay Roger Smith for his failure and keep some back for the next dumb cough that earned a reward. Woo! You talk about ranting and raving. Well, I didn't have to even say it.
No, I can tell that you felt strongly about this column because you didn't even use any da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You read it verbatim.
Just went right. I didn't, actually. I made up most of it.
1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
You don't want to hear any more letters?
No. Hello.
Hi, this is Nikki, and I'm from Wyoming, except I'm calling from Denver because I just moved here.
Oh. So do you...
I've traveled the whole state of Wyoming. No, whereabouts in Wyoming are you from?
Cheyenne.
Never heard of it.
Oh, come on.
Wait a minute. Now,
I ate lunch in Cheyenne.
Once.
Ate lunch?
Yeah.
What, yesterday?
No. When I was in Wyoming, I ate lunch.
No kidding.
Was it Frontier Days?
With a place where I ate lunch?
No, when you were in Cheyenne.
No.
Oh, well, you got to come back for Frontier Days.
Wait a minute. Now, Nikki,
what Frontier Days? It sounds to me like some kind of a rodeo.
It is. The biggest outdoor rodeo in the world.
Do you know where the biggest indoor rodeo in the world is?
Calgary.
Do you know where the biggest...
Are you some kind of a wise guy?
Do you know where the biggest shopping mall in the world is?
Yes.
Yeah, I do. It's in Minneapolis.
Yes.
No, it isn't.
It's going to be in Minneapolis. They're building a mega mall.
Yeah, but right now it's not Minneapolis. No.
Well, where is it now?
I'll tell you where. Vancouver.
Very close.
I didn't know
Edmonton, Alberta, Canada has the largest mall in the world, I think. But wait, Nikki.
Well, anyway, the largest indoor rodeo in America, in the United States.
Yes,
that's
in
right.
Houston.
Is always
Houston,
no,
home
always
of
been,
George Bush. No, he lives in Houston,
no,
you know.
He's always been at Madison Square Garden, but they probably don't have it anymore.
No?
Due to lack of interest. But that used to be the largest indoor rodeo.
Really?
Square Garden,
this
yeah.
is great. Isn't that interesting?
Isn't it?
No,
anyway,
it isn't.
Well, it's been great talking to you, Nikki.
But, no way. No,
okay, go ahead. We promise not to interrupt for at least the next 30 seconds.
Okay. So I have this Honda Prelude 1988 SI, and I took it in about Christmas to get its 30,000-mile checkup a
uh-huh.
little bit late. It's over 30,000.
It's okay. We won't tell.
But before I took it in, my husband said, it makes this funny noise when you turn, and so tell him that. And I couldn't really ever hear the noise, but he insisted that it was there. And so when I took it in, I told him that it made this funny noise whenever I turned the car.
But you lied, right?
Well,
you
no.
lied, and I'll bet you they caught you at it.
No, they
because they said, what
the
does
noise.
It sound like? And you said, I don't know, I never heard it.
Heck no, they gave me three options to fix the noise.
Oh.
They did.
Okay, so they told me that I could replace the axles, like, to an exorbitant sum.
Yeah, $900.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay,
or
so you immediately...
You said, that can't be what's wrong with it. Give right. me some other choice.
Discounted that.
Yeah.
Well, or I could replace the boots at, like, $100 a piece. And the lady said to me, well, you should just replace the boots because it won't make the noise probably go away, but it will fix whatever's wrong. And, so
and make us $200 richer. What was,
exactly.
what was choice C?
So I replaced the boots, and I've been driving it ever since, and now the noise is really bad. And so when you turn the car...
Click, 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 click.
Yeah, it goes, kind of like there's a big old rock in there or something that is grating again.
Hmm.
And so you have around 35,000 miles on the car.
Yeah, close.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I think they gave you some bad advice there.
Oh.
See, the boots, it's unlikely that the boots were torn.
And it's unlikely that the boots, which are rubber, could make noise.
No. She did say that replacing the boots is not going to make the noise go away. She could have replaced some. She could have suggested something cheaper, like
replacing
a car wash.
Replacing the ashtray or something. That wouldn't make the noise go away either.
Right, but it would have been a lot cheaper. If the boots weren't ripped, you shouldn't have replaced them.
Well, she said something about if I didn't replace them, then there would be... like gravel and stuff gathering inside.
Oh, so the boot probably was ripped.
Ah, I mean, that gathering of gravel.
Gathering of gravel.
Well, here's the sad part of it. You probably do need to have the axles replaced, but the good news is I think you may be able to browbeat the service manager into doing it for a lot less than $900.
You think?
Yeah.
So that's what's making the noise is the axles need to be replaced?
One or more of the axles is bad. If I were the service manager, I would start by replacing one of them. I'd take my best guess at where the noise is coming from, and he can...
And he can probably do that by putting the car up on the lift and running it.
Yeah, or he may be able
side
to...
By each.
Even the road test might be able to tell him. For example, you can pretty much isolate where the noise is coming from if you make a very sharp turn from a dead stop. So you cut the wheels all the way to the left at a dead stop, and then you take off.
Yeah, get your husband to drape himself across the hood. And as you drive around in a parking lot, he'll be able to tell if the noise
right.
is there.
Then now, don't drive around. Too fast because he'll fly off.
Sometimes that's not so bad.
That's not bad, right.
So what happens if I don't replace it?
Well, eventually one of the axles will break. I mean, it's not going to hurt you, and it may go on for a long, long time before it breaks. But the point is that the car is so young that you shouldn't expect to have a problem like this until it's gotten to be 70 or 80,000 miles old.
Yeah.
Right.
So
you have a claim here for poor workmanship, which Honda would not like to have people know about.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, well, you do, because, I mean, this is not something that happens to cars with 35,000 miles on them.
Oh, okay. It shouldn't
happen.
If I take it back to the dealer and tell them that they had poor workmanship on it and it shouldn't be happening, they should give me a break.
And you would like them to do it for free. Always ask for more than you want.
Oh, yeah.
You'd like them to do it for free and tune it up as a matter of goodwill.
Oh, yeah. You don't know this dealer.
Throw a paint job on it.
And a wash and wax.
Throw a paint job on it. What color do you like? You're sick of that?
God.
No, seriously. I mean, it is an expensive job, but it really shouldn't have happened so early in the life of this car, and they really ought to do something for you, especially since I really don't think they gave you good advice. If it was making noise, then I don't know that replacing the boots was...
No, you definitely want to ask them...
At the price you paid.
At the very least, to credit you the $200 for the boots, which you threw
away. Exactly right.
Tell them they can have the boots back.
Right.
Because
right.
if you buy new axles, you get new boots. But really, shoot high.
Yeah.
If you ask them to split it with you, you won't get anything. You're going to have to do like my wife does. She says, "Hon, I'm going to the store for a gallon of milk. Can I have $100?"
And you give it to her?
No, I go to get the milk myself. She gets me to go.
It's the only thing that gets them off the sofa, the threat of the $100.
Ask for the moon, and maybe they'll split it with you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, the Puzzler Answer and more calls are coming up right after this. This message comes from NPR sponsor eBay Motors. If you're like most people, there's been a time where you had to stop working on your car because you didn't have the right parts. But eBay Motors thinks the only thing that should slow your car down is the brakes, or maybe friction, but not a lack of parts. That's why eBay Motors has all the right parts at the right prices. In fact, they have 122 million parts, all at your disposal. That way, you can keep your project moving and your car not just running, but running in style. ebaymotors.com. Let's ride. This message comes from NPR sponsor Evercoat Body Shop. If you want to take the guesswork out of bodywork, Evercoat Body Shop has the right product for your project, whether you're a professional or a DIYer. Three easy steps, just prep, fill, and sand. The perfect mix guide makes it easy to get the right ratio of filler and cream hardener. It dries in about 15 minutes and sands up to 50% faster than the competition. Evercoat is the number one brand preferred by professionals. Available at Advance Auto Parts. Hey, you know what it's time for?
It's howdy doody time.
No, it is not howdy doody time.
Howdy doody time.
It's time for last week's puzzle. Do you
remember? Oh, my God. Yes. How far can you count?
No.
Why am I always a week behind?
Two.
I'm 2 weeks behind?
Three.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Sonia, Henny's tutu. No, I have no idea.
Yeah, you do. This was a multiple choice.
I remember it.
Puzzle.
I do remember it. Multiple choice, and it had to do with Henry Ford.
No.
Volkswagens.
Volkswagens.
I do
right.
remember.
Here it is.
Simple.
When did the first Volkswagen roll off the assembly line?
Fall off the end of the assembly line. And with the choice,
was it
I remember.
A, 1967.
Yeah.
We know that's wrong. We'll cross that off.
That's wrong.
I mean, you had to put in a few silly ones, right? Like the college boards. B, 1936.
Possible.
Very good possibility.
That's
indeed.
A possibility, yeah.
Okay. Three, 1939.
That's another possibility.
An even better possibility.
Yeah.
D, 1945. Kind of stupid. They were in the middle of the war then, right? The war was just ending.
Yeah, there was
it
a war.
It ended in 1945.
Yeah.
It's unlikely they made any cars.
So that's not likely.
Not likely.
49 is likely.
49 is likely, too.
So we've narrowed it down to 36, 39, and 1949. None of which
right.
is correct.
They're all wrong. The answer is 1945. 1949, however, is curious. That's the first year that Volkswagens were imported in the United States. Two of them.
Two of
there
them?
There were two Volkswagens imported in 1949.
49.
It was,
I think I had one
Volkswagen.
Of them.
Volkswagen. You still do. That's the Volkswagen debuted in America, and there were two of them. And if you have one of those, which might be pretty valuable.
I doubt it.
Did we have a winner?
Yeah, we got a winner. The winner is Anthony, if I can pronounce his name, Riresich from Boise, Idaho. And for coming up with that magnificent answer, Anthony Riresich. He's going to win an autographed copy of our extremely mediocre book, Car Talk, which includes answers to all the questions you always wanted to ask and answers to
Wrong
all the
answers.
Puzzler
Wrong
questions
answers,
as well.
Of course, but you can...
Don't forget, if you had a copy of our book, you could look up these answers. Every week, we take a puzzle right from the book. The answers are given in the back, and you could win a copy of our book if you had our book.
That's called false advertising. There are no puzzles in there.
Hey! If George Bush can do it, so can I.
Well, we have a brand new puzzle coming up later on, so be sure to stay tuned for that. In the meantime, if you want to talk to us, the number is 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Click?
Yeah.
Yes, this is Click or Clack.
It's Daniel Pinkwater.
Daniel!
Really?
You remember me as the inventor of the theory of displaced misery.
Yes, I know it well.
It goes, if you own a French car...
Yeah.
No other evil can befall you.
That's right. Nothing that you could notice, at least.
Yeah. Now, I never thought I'd be calling you in your consultative capacity.
No kidding. I have at least one of your books in my bathroom.
Oh,
in a coveted spot in the bathroom, I should say. And whenever I have the opportunity, I think it's, is it Fish Whistle?
Fish Whistle.
Yes, that's the one.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, you wrote that.
Well, I take off my glasses to you. Now, I have a strange tale for you.
Yeah.
Oh, we're ready.
I'm going to relate this as though you guys were Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
I'm including all the details, however boring and unimportant.
Yes.
Oh, like all of our callers do.
Including the peculiar behavior of the dog.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
I will not forget that. Three brothers named Mike. They're foreign men.
Wait, Daniel, where are you from?
I'm in upstate New York.
Okay. Okay, three brothers named Mike.
Three brothers named Mike, men of foreign origin,
uh-huh.
opened a used car lot in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
Now, as you know, and as we all lament, there are no more French cars coming into this country.
Yeah.
And so I bought from them, I think, a nice car.
A used Peugeot.
A 1987 BMW 528E. Mm-hmm. With 75,000 miles on it.
It is a nice car.
It's a nice car. Now, there are two things that were curious. One of them was that the car was immaculate when they showed it to me, but when they delivered it, the ashtray was full of butts, and there were corn chips all over the carpets.
Sounds like they had one last fling at the drive-in.
They liked me, and therefore they ate their lunch in my car as a gesture of confidence. Now, here's the other thing.
Yeah.
They had three or four of these cars, all the same model, all 87s.
Mm.
And let me guess.
All with about the same mileage on them.
Of course.
That was my guess.
Okay, yeah. They were all former lease cars, mm-hmm. off lease,
yeah.
and they all came from Connecticut where people take care of their things, okay?
Yeah.
And all of them, including the one I bought, have insane possessed dashboards. The tachometer jumps all over. The fuel gauge is erratic. The water temperature gauge registers boiling and freezing, goes back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little row of lights that's supposed to tell you when to service, and that's like a disco. It's going all the time.
Yeah.
The speedometer's okay, but the general effect is like a pinball machine.
Wait a minute. Now, this is the one you bought, or all of them?
All of them.
How do you know that?
Because Mike told me, hey, don't worry, they all do that.
They Yes, that is the classic response. Mm. Yeah.
Now, my question is, why do they do that? Should I have it fixed? Can it be fixed? And is it related in any way to the corn chips?
Or the cigarette butts.
Or the cigarette butts.
Yes. Okay. Or the peculiar behavior of the dog.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm.
This is very interesting. I'm trying to think.
I mean, I can speculate as to what it might be.
Go ahead.
Please.
I mean, it sounds like there's a bad ground somewhere.
I would have to agree with that.
Ooh.
Well, why would they all have a bad ground?
Well, that's peculiar. That's the part I'm working on. I mean, typically when that happens, it is a bad ground somewhere. And why would that be? Unless...
Well, unless it was some defect. And if it were some defect, it would be something that would affect all. That would explain why all of them have the same thing. Why?
Now, I should add that this car is heavily computerized.
Yeah.
Including a little...
Yeah.
Video game on the dash where you can punch buttons and find out
your mileage and all that.
How fast you're going in kilometers and
yeah.
what the temperature is in Stuttgart.
But all of that stuff works.
Some of that works.
Yeah.
Some of that works. What doesn't work correctly
are the instruments.
The instruments, exactly. But the only instrument that does work correctly is the speedometer and odometer because that is non-electronic.
Ah.
Okay, that is controlled by a cable that comes off the transmission.
Right.
It's a regular analog speedometer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, I have an idea about this, but I know nothing about things mechanical. However, I am a genius.
Yes, we know that.
Yeah.
Could it be that there's like a battery that's a NiCad battery that's losing its ability to take a charge that's...
Oh, that runs all this stuff?
Hmm?
Not to the best of my knowledge.
No, but there is somewhere under there a little voltage regulator that operates all of this stuff. And that might be the problem. I mean, the easiest thing to do is you got to follow to find out, is it really that all these 87s have this problem, or only the three Mike's cars have this problem?
Did they take delivery of all of these cars at the same time?
I believe they went to Mike's, not them, but another Mike, not no relative, Mike's Auto Auction.
Not related, right.
And picked up these cars.
So yeah. Mike, and Mike drove down there with a car carrier.
That's right.
And picked up these cars from Mike in Connecticut.
Ah, got it.
Right. Yeah. And okay. They brought them back to sell to the citizens over here.
And I believe that they encountered a UFO on the way back.
That does happen, you know, Daniel.
Yes.
There is a big magnetic rock on the border between New York and Connecticut.
Well, yeah, I've been right by there. And, in fact, strange things happen. Semis have disappeared driving by that rock.
Uh-huh. It's called the Bermuda Rock.
Bermuda Rock. The Bermuda Triangular Rock. Now, what I would do is I would call a BMW dealer and
wait a minute. Oh. Call the dealer?
Yes, you could just call. They won't know.
The charge is small for that.
They will not trace the call.
I'll use an assumed name. I'll tell them I'm Mike.
That's right. They will not be able to trace the call yet. I don't think they have the technology yet, although they're working on it.
All you
want to know is whether or not there is a service bulletin that covers this problem. If they deny all knowledge of this strange poltergeist behavior, then we have to narrow it down to the three Mikes.
Yeah, and I don't believe, and then I would have to go with it being the UFO.
Then we go with the magnetic rock theory.
Now, I'll tell you what the three Mikes told me.
Oh, they had a theory on this.
Yes.
Yeah.
They said, don't worry. It's a great car. You got it cheap. And then they gave me some pork rinds and pretzels.
I guess the moral of this tale is stay away from any mechanic named Mike. Is that it?
Well, Mike the mechanic has that nice...
It does have a ring to it, and maybe that's how...
I have to tell you,
touch.
I can see out my window, and the three Mikes are in my car listening to us on the radio now.
Are they eating corn chips?
Yes.
What brand of cigarettes do they smoke? Are they Gauloises?
No. They're American filter tips.
Ah, good.
These Mikes are sophisticated guys.
No, seriously, Daniel, I would call a dealer, really,
and
find out if there is a service bulletin. And I would have to bet that there is, because the likelihood of five of these having been struck by lightning on the car carrier or being picked up by the UFO, well, actually, the UFO is not a bad idea.
No, the UFO is strong.
I'll bet you, however, that
they come from Jersey, UFO would have been my first thought.
Yeah. I'll bet there is a service bulletin, and I'll bet that what's wrong is the little voltage regulator that controls the voltage to the panel. That's my bet.
Or a bad ground connection. That's my bet.
Regulator or bad ground.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the dealer will know this in a minute.
And for only the price that I paid for the car, he'll sell me one.
A little less.
Yeah.
Okay. We are honored that you called us.
I am honored that you even spoke to me.
Thanks.
Our pleasure.
Okay.
See you later.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. More calls and a new puzzler coming up right after these messages. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're here to answer your questions about cars and car repair, of course, and the tax ramifications of the Tappet Brothers Capital Depreciation Fund.
This is actually the time of year when you're happy that you are in the Capital Depreciation Fund.
Yes.
Because you get tremendous deductions on your income tax returns.
Yes.
By virtue of the fact that what used to be like $100,000 is now $50,000.
Right.
And you can get...
And we manage to do that with everyone that invests in the capital depreciation.
Even if you don't invest
No risk involved. You send us your money, we'll guarantee we'll send it back.
Absolutely. 50% return. We guarantee a 50% return. No matter what amount you...
Return of.
Of. Whatever.
Of.
Whatever amount you send us, we will, at the end of the year, return to you 50% of what you sent us.
Talk about something sleazy. Never mind. We'll get into that later. But I have a new puzzler.
You do? You don't want me to read any mail?
No.
Okay. Well, is it a wonderful puzzler or is it another one of these lousy...
It is not a lousy puzzler.
It's probably not wonderful either.
I think it has the potential to be... Well, let me put it this way. The question is wonderful. I'm not so sure how wonderful the answer is, but the answer is... I have the correct answer.
All right.
But I don't think most of our listeners will be thrilled by the answer.
No, that was not the right thing to say, because now... Well, I don't know. What's the question?
Well, the question is, it's automotive in nature.
It is.
But it's not really highly technically, well, maybe it is. Why don't I ask the question?
Why don't you?
We've all heard the expression, lugging the engine. What is lugging the engine? Now, this is not the puzzler.
This is not the puzzler.
I'm going to explain what lugging the engine is. Lugging the engine
if you had just bought a new engine, like from the junkyard.
Oh, right.
And you had to bring it home. Right. And you said, how am I going to get it out to the truck? They
you
say,
lug
you
got
to lug it. Isn't that it?
Kind of. What's commonly known as lugging the engine is driving the thing in too high a gear. For example, if you are driving at 25 miles an hour speed, for which you would ordinarily be in second gear, and you are driving, however, in fourth or fifth gear, you would be guilty of
lugging the engine. Right.
The engine
doesn't want to do that. Right?
Doesn't want to do it.
Right.
But so what? Would you want to? Were you trying to make friends with the engine? Do you care?
Right. You may not want a long-term relationship with the engine. And you won't have one if you keep doing this.
Well, and that's the question. Yeah. Why is lugging the engine bad? Everyone says lugging the engine is bad for the engine.
Yes. And the question is, exactly why is that true?
Right?
This has always been a question that has plagued philosophers.
This is axiomatic. Everyone believes this.
Yes.
And it, in fact, is true. There's no trickery here.
There's no trickery.
It's true. It is bad to lug the engine. But nobody...
It's not clear that anyone knows why.
I know why.
You do.
Yes.
You and who?
Paul Merkey. Merkey and I collaborated on this. Anyway, if you think you know the answer, write to us at Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, 630 Commonwealth Avenue, Boston.
Our fair city.
I thought you were going to trip up there. Massachusetts, MA 02215. And if you want to communicate with us in any other fashion, even if you don't want to submit an answer to the puzzle, if you want to send us a tale of woe and intrigue, or you want to share with us a new and wonderful puzzler.
Yes,
or even just new, we'd be happy to hear from you.
No, wonderful would be really good.
In the meantime, if you want to call us, the number is 1-800-332-9287. That's a wonderful puzzler. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Oh, this is Moses Alexander.
Hi, Moses.
Georgia.
Warner Robins, Georgia.
That's right.
We got it.
I got it.
What's up, Moses?
I have a Mitsubishi Galant, and I change my own oil.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go to the dealer to buy my oil filter, it's quite expensive, and they tell me that I should always use a Mitsubishi oil filter because it has a valve in it that keeps the oil up when the car's not running.
Yeah.
Check valve.
This is another one of those.
How expensive is the Mitsubishi filter?
Well, it's
$15.
It started at about $6, $5 or $6, and now it's almost $10.
Mm.
And anyway, I went to the parts store and I checked out some oil filters, and I found some of them you could blow through it one way, and the other way you couldn't blow through it. So that some of them had check valves and some didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them you couldn't blow through at all. And,
did anyone look at you funny when you were there blowing through all these filters? Or did they just, oh, yeah, well, we do that all the time.
Well, Moses does that all the time.
And the guy came up and asked me what I was doing. I said, well, I'm blowing through filters, you know?
I said, what's your problem, pal? And how much do these filters that you blow through cost?
Well, they're about $1.98.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
But if I get a decent one, you know, I mean, one that has comes in a nice box and says farm or something on it.
Farm filter, yeah.
Yeah.
Then you're up to like $5.
Well, they're a little more, but I don't know that they have a check valve in them or not.
They do.
Yeah.
I would say that most of the brand name filters, the good, and we can mention the brands like Fram,
for example,
or
is one.
Purolator or Wix or some of the other well-known brands probably meet all the OEM specifications. I mean, think about it. They'd have to, because if they didn't and you ruined your engine, wouldn't you sue them? People sue everyone for everything these days.
Yeah. Well, how would I know that it was the oil filter?
Wouldn't make any difference. Just sue them anyway. Let the judge decide.
Now, this is a common ploy that dealerships, I have to say, I mean, this is the truth, dealerships, and there are, and it's not a matter of whether they be Mitsubishi dealerships or General Motors dealerships, but the, as you may know, there are sleazeballs everywhere.
Right. The owner's manual says something like this. Everyone else's parts are crap. So if you want to make sure your car runs great, buy your parts from us.
Right. For example, they will say the same thing about antifreeze. You should only use Mitsubishi antifreeze. If you want to buy brake fluid, you should only use Mitsubishi brake fluid. And of course, it costs twice as much as every other antifreeze.
Even if it didn't know whether it costs twice as much or not, at least you're buying it from them. And in their estimation, that's a good thing. They don't want you buying it from someone else.
Right. And that's true. They would love you to buy it from them. But the truth is that all of these are equivalent. And anyone who tells you that their product is different, especially oil filters without check valves, I mean, that's a lie. It's an outright lie. So you should
know. Not that there aren't oil filters without them. I'm sure there are some cheap filters.
Right, but if you read,
that do not.
If you ask the guy in the parts store for the oil filter which is correct for your make and year of car, he will tell you, and it will guaranteed it will have a check valve.
Well.
So there.
Well, I don't know. Who's going to guarantee this?
I'm guaranteeing everything. I'm moving to Houston, Texas.
Here's what you do. You write a letter to Farm Oil Filters, and you ask them if they have a check valve, and ask them for the name of their lawyer, just in case it doesn't. And Moses, I wouldn't go into the store blowing into any more filters. They're going to be after you after a while. There's going to be a law against that. I don't know what it is, but I'm sure there's a law. So,
yeah, be very, very careful.
Yeah. Thanks for your call. Bye-bye.
Thanks very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
That was a good question, by the way, Moses.
It was a good question.
Yeah.
Well, another hour of Car Talk has come to an end. They can lock us up for another week now. Our producer is Doug Berman. Our assistant producer is Spud Jennings. Our technical advisor is John Lawler. Where's all the Bugsies and all that other stuff?
John Sebastian.
Bugsy.
Don't call me Bugsy. Lawler.
Mr. Height Lawler.
Sweet cheeks, oh. Mr. Height Lawler.
I think that about covered all the bases. Our engineer is Jennifer Conifer Gonifor Loeb. Our dean of the Department of Automusicology is Ken Babyface Rogers. Our chief bottle washer, Ken Okono, who's helping us out. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research. Our automotive medical researcher is Dr. Denton Fender. Staff grammarian?
Philologist.
I knew you were going to say that. I am Shirley Wright. Our director of long-range strategic planning is Frank Seurat.
Who is married to Kay Seurat.
Right, he just took her job. Our staff disciplinarian is Les Stern. Staff transportation coordinator is Rick Shaw. Our staff composer, Bela Kartok.
Saw him just the other day.
He is the conductor of the Tappan Brothers Symphony Orchestra, Sledge Ozawa. Our staff meteorologist is Gail Storm. The manager of the Tappan Brothers Capital Depreciation Fund, in case anyone from the IRS is listening today, is Les Ismore. Our chief legal counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe, of course, is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to his friends as Huey Louie Dewey. And our chief security officer here is Barb Dwyer. We're kicking clap the Tappan Brothers. Mr. Gigi does our hair. Wardrobe by Natalie Attire. Don't drive like my brother.
Oh, my brother.
Thanks for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye. This is NPR, National Public Radio.